the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. If you live in the United States, the tax filing deadline for income tax is, by the way, it's been extended this year by 2 days, is Tuesday, April 17th. So you do have a couple of extra days to file. It hasn't become quite as much of a trauma at the post office as it used to be, now that so many people with simple returns can simply file electronically, but a lot of people choose to send in paper returns nevertheless for various reasons that are not unimportant. We're going to pick up today on this program with the importance of taxes when you are doing retirement planning, because taxes are going to be one of the major expenses in retirement. As a matter of fact, Jim, I'm finding it's one of the major expenses now when I look at the pie chart of gazintas and gazoutas on my budget, you know. The whole thing is about where you spend your money is where? Housing, medical will be for many people an increasing expense as they get older, and then taxes. And what we'd like to talk about today on the show is how you can use the tax law to your benefit in planning for retirement and when you're in retirement.
Yeah, one of the things that was proposed last year, it's not what actually got passed. They were talking about, as you recall, John, they were going to simplify the tax to three tax brackets, and then they were going to make it simple. And you remember Paul Ryan showing a postcard. It will be so simple, you wouldn't need an accountant or CPA anymore. You could just fill it out on a postcard. How much you made? Here's your bracket. There were no deductions, no exemptions, none of those things. It would be that simple. Well, actually, they made it more complex. There are certain tax brackets you need to be aware of in terms of what your marginal tax bracket is. In other words, which bracket you are. There are other things that come into play now. You still have the Obamacare taxes and the additional Medicare tax that kick in on a certain bracket. And then you also have the phase out of a lot of itemized deductions. So the tax bill, if anything, has gotten more complex. And here's the thing you have to remember. The bill did not get passed by a majority, so it sunsets in 10 years. So 10 years from now, unless they make some changes in Congress, you will have lost much of your housing deductions, your state tax deductions, your miscellaneous deductions, a good portion of your property tax deductions, and then the tax bill reverts back to the old tax rates, which were much higher. It's going to get complex. So it's very important when you're planning for retirement, or let's say you're retired, you need to know where these different tax brackets come into play, because it determines how much tax you're going to pay on your investment income, how much tax you're going to pay on all sources of income, because investments can be taxed in a different bracket than your income that comes in from wages, that comes in from a pension, that comes in from Social Security, that comes in from, let's say, withdrawals from an IRA. So that's why we're going to spend a little time today and tell you why this is important. Another thing I want to cover, and this is very important for many of you that have substantial assets and you want to leave those assets to your children and heirs, even though the estate tax exemption was raised to such a limit that most people will not face estate taxes, many of you don't know, you may be living in a state that has inheritance and estate taxes. In fact, there's two states that have inheritance tax in addition to an estate tax. And those tax rates can run as high as 16 to 20% versus, let's say, the federal estate tax rate of 40%. So I want to spend some time on doing some tax planning and make you aware of the different tax rates that apply to your personal income versus your investments. And when it comes to this, there's some good news, because overall, with the new tax bill, the tax rates have come down for the majority of Americans. There are a couple individuals, depending on where you live, and this is where it gets complex.
I will have to say, Jim, I was disappointed when they put this through, because if there's one thing that's been needed for a long time, especially for small businesses and individuals, is just a total simplification of these forms, having just gone through this pain again, and especially for small businesses, the amount of time it takes them to comply with all of this, I had sincerely hoped for something that would become simple. When we fill out a sales tax return every year, it takes 15 minutes, you know, to just put all the information in. There it goes. You mail it off with the check or whatever you need to send. Why couldn't they make it this simple? But it isn't, and that's the problem. The difference, however, here, even though if we look at the Constitution, it said a direct tax is to be apportioned, meaning equally distributed among everybody else on a percentage basis, this tax bill affects people differently depending on where you live. And it depends on the tax situation in your individual state, which affects the federal return, and also your cost of living. So what people pay in one state may be a bigger burden than the other, simply because of all these other factors. So it's actually really complicated the issue even more here.
Oh, absolutely. And as we'll get into income taxes here and estate taxes, where you live now determines how much your heirs are going to receive when you pass away, and also the income taxes that you're going to pay. So it's not universal anymore. At one time, our laws applied to everyone equally. They no longer apply to anyone equally anymore. It depends, as John just mentioned, where you live. Higher places or higher cost of living places like California, New York, New Jersey, where the cost of owning a home, I mean, you know, the definition of a millionaire in California is a homeowner because the homes are so expensive here. But in this tax bill, they were supposed to simplify. They didn't. We still have seven tax brackets. So you need to know what that marginal tax bracket is. But here's something that, and this is what I want to get to, that determines how much taxes you pay depends on where you live. Because they limit mortgage deductions now. It used to be you could deduct up to $1 million and then an additional $100,000 for, let's say, a second mortgage. On new purchases, that's dropped to $750,000. Now, $750,000 in flyover land can buy you a nice house. $750,000 in Los Angeles, San Francisco, where the median cost of a entry house is about $1.4 million, is nothing. So you're losing your mortgage deduction. The property tax deduction has been limited to $10,000. So if you are in California where the property taxes can be as much as 2%, you have $1 million house. That's $20,000 in property taxes. You only get to deduct half of it. And if you live in high tax states like California, which has the highest income tax in the country, well, you can no longer deduct that on your tax return. So once again, if you're thinking of retirement planning, where you live is going to impact the taxes you pay. You've also lost your miscellaneous deductions. Now, why it's important to know your marginal tax bracket? You have two of them. One bracket applies to your regular income. So that could be like if you're a salaried employee, if you get a pension, if you get Social Security, if you're taking withdrawals from an IRA. That's one tax bracket. There's another tax bracket. Actually, there's two tax brackets that apply to investments, because investments such as dividends and capital gains are taxed at one rate. And if you're fortunate enough to have a certain level of income, you pay an additional Obamacare tax of 3.8% on your investment income, whether it's dividends, interest, annuity payments, rent, doesn't matter what it is, you pay an additional 3.8%, and you can also pay 3.9% additional Medicare tax. So here's the complexity. There's three marginal tax brackets you need to be aware of when you're planning for your taxes. Once again, this is applying to different types of income. For example, your investments might be taxed at one bracket. Your pension, deferred comp, Social Security will be taxed at another bracket. And if your income exceeds a certain level, you get an additional 3.8% tax on your investments. Or if you're working, you could end up paying an additional 0.9% Medicare tax. So this was a major change, and it's become not simplified, it has become more complex. And remember, even as we plan for this over the next 10 years, in the next 10 years, this can all change because it'll, just like the Bush tax cuts, were sunsetted after 10 years. And if you remember back in 2010, we didn't know what the estate tax rates were going to be because everything was sunsetted and Congress was jockeying back and forth and trying to reach a resolution in terms of what the exemption would be and what the tax rate would be. So the good news is the tax rates have come down, except for there's a little donut area around the $400,000 where you can actually see an increase in your taxes. That's a show in itself, and we're not going to talk about it today. But what you did lose in exchange for those lower tax rates, you lost your exemptions, and you lost much of your itemized deductions. So as John and I have been speaking here, where you live and work can now play a major role in the amount of taxes you pay. And this is one thing that is, I guess, most people won't realize this until probably April of next year when the full impact of this tax bill hits them, especially if you live in high tax or high cost of living states like California, New York, and other states.
I would imagine that when you're doing retirement planning for your clients, this all really makes your life really fun.
Yeah, it is something that we are doing a lot more of. In terms of retirement planning for our clients, it's not just, okay, I plan to retire. It's, I plan to retire, but where do you plan to live? And that is coming more and more. I would say at least over 20% of our clients in California who are planning on retiring. I have one gentleman right now who's in the process of selling his business. His company's being bought out by a public company in exchange for shares. Now, good thing about that, there will be no tax when that takes place. But part of our planning is moving him to another state, at which time he'll start diversifying out of the stock of the company that's buying him out. But John, relocation is now becoming a major part of retirement planning, and it has to be with this new tax bill. So when you think about it, when we're doing retirement planning, what are the things that come into play? Cost of living. What is housing at a cost? That's one of your big costs. Income taxes. What's the income tax rate in the state you're going to live in? And number three, estate taxes. And we're going to get into this because you're going to be shocked to find out the number of states that tax your heirs at a much lower level and at rates that can range from 16 to 20%. This is something that really surprises people when we make them aware of it. So the result of the new tax bill is for many individuals, there are no estate taxes because the exemption was raised to $11 million. And if you're married and set up a living trust, you can shelter up to $22 million. So for most individuals in this country, estate taxes have gone away. But the gotcha is state taxes in some states like New Jersey, where you actually have inheritance tax and an estate tax that runs at 16%. One state has, we'll get into this shortly, one state has a tax rate of 20%. 11 states have a tax rate of 16%. And one state starts taxing your estate for your heirs when you're over $675,000. Now, if you have $675,000, that's not a lot of money today. So we'll get into that in just a moment. So if you are planning to retire, one of the big decisions that now must go into your retirement planning is where will you live? Because that will play a major role in the amount of income taxes you pay, which is probably for many of you could be either your second or third largest expense. And then also for your heirs, we had a case recently that was brought to us by a family that inherited some money. It was two of the children, and they were surprised. Their parents had set up a living trust, and they thought there would be no estate taxes. There were no federal estate taxes, but the state they lived in had estate taxes, which shocked them. And many people are not aware of this. So this is one of the things that you now have to and should incorporate into your retirement plans, because it's going to play a major role in terms of your retirement lifestyle.
Okay, we'd like to get into the black arts here and move on to the complications of what we're calling now bracketology, because the brackets have become, doggone it, why can't the politicians get this right? Anyway, because the tax bracketing situation has gotten more complex too, and you need to realize how you can shuffle around. I don't think the shock's going to hit positive or negative until we file returns next year, to be honest with you.
No, because most people are, you know, they're still on the old system because they're filing their 2017 taxes now, and that's under the old system. So they still get to deduct, you get exemptions, you have property tax, you have state tax. All that was in place for 2017. It goes away this year. So for many of you, you're probably not going to realize this until April of next year. I want to move on to one tax bracket that's very important, and that is the tax bracket that's applied to investment income and capital gains. And because dividends are taxed twice, they're taxed once when a company earns a profit, there's a corporate tax rate, which got lowered. Then they're taxed again when a corporation, after paying their taxes, sends you, the shareholder, a dividend, you pay a tax. And because dividends are taxed twice, they are taxed at a special rate. Now, here's going to be some of the good news. For many of you, your dividends will be tax-free. Let me repeat that again. Your dividends will be tax-free, and I'll get to that. Interest income, on the other hand, is taxed as ordinary income unless you're in tax-free bonds. So interest income, whether you're in treasuries, corporate bonds, emerging market bond funds, they are taxed at a higher tax rate as ordinary income versus, let's say, the income that you get from a dividend. So it's important to understand the distinction on how your investments are taxed, because there's different tax rates that apply to them. So when you think of tax-free, everybody's aware of municipal bonds. If you buy the tax-free bonds of your state, if your state has an income tax, you don't pay any state income taxes, and they're exempt from federal tax. But most investors aren't aware that dividends are also, to a certain extent, tax-free. Now, here's some important numbers, and I'm just going to throw this number, get a pencil, and write it down. I'm going to give you a series of numbers, and they're very important if you're invested in stocks or, let's say, a stock fund that pays a dividend. If you are single, the first $37,950 is taxed at zero. You pay no tax roughly on the first $38,000 of dividends. Then after you exceed $37,950, you only pay 15% on the next income, going all the way up to $418,400. So basically, after you exceed $38,000, the next close to almost $400,000 is taxed at 15%. Versus, let's say, the other tax brackets that go all the way from 10, 12, all the way up to the 37% bracket. So dividends are more favorably taxed than, let's say, interest income from corporate bonds or, let's say, treasuries. That figure for a married couple is the first $77,200 are taxed at zero. After that, the figure goes up to $479,000, which is taxed at 15%. Now, let me give you some more good news. They got rid of a lot of the itemized deductions, and they said, well, we're going to give you a standard deduction, and it's going to be higher. We're going to raise it. For a married couple, the standard deduction is $24,000. For a single individual, that standard deduction is $12,000. Now, here's the important planning part. If you are single and you take the $12,000 and add that to, let's say, the first $37,950, roughly the first $50,000 of dividend income that you're going to get is taxed at zero, because you get $38,000 that's taxed at zero, but you also have a standard bracket of, let's say, $12,000. For a married couple, it's $24,000. So that figure goes up to $101,200, of which you will pay no tax on your dividends. So this is why, if you are retired or working, you should incorporate dividend-paying stocks or dividend-paying mutual funds is part of your investment in tax planning. And dividends meaning coming from stock funds, not from a bond fund, because bond funds are taxed as ordinary interest. So even if you are working in a high tax bracket, remember, the highest bracket that you can pay on dividends is 23.8%, because there's three brackets for dividends. Zero bracket, the 15% bracket, the 20% bracket, and then the fourth bracket is 23.8, and that's when you exceed a certain level of income, you pay an additional Obamacare tax of 3.8%. So another reason to know your bracket for retirement planning is you have different brackets that apply to different levels of income. And it's very important, whether it's, you know, pensions, Social Security, deferred compensation, it really gets complex. And remember, here's the gotcha tax. At age 70 and a half, you are now required, well, you've always been required to take out minimum distributions from your IRA. And those distributions go up every single year. The older you get, the more you have to take out. So you may be in one bracket now. Let's say you're not taking any money out of your IRA. And all of a sudden at age 70 and a half, you are forced to start taking distributions. So you always want to incorporate some form of tax-free income as part of your tax planning.
Jim, let's see if we can simplify this, as if you can do this.
Simplify that. Yeah,
I'm trying. Give me a chance. Let's see. Let's cover the forms of tax-free income, because normally when people think about tax-free income from investments, they talk about municipal bonds, but dividends are in that category too.
Yeah, there's basically four ways to get tax-free income. The first that everybody's familiar with is tax-free bonds. A second way to get tax-free income is a Roth IRA, and we're using a lot of Roth conversions on IRAs to create tax-free income for our clients, because they're going to need it, because many of them will be pushed into higher brackets. Another way to get tax-free income, if you're planning for college, is 529 plans. And the fourth way, up to a certain level of income, dividends are taxed at 0%. So you need to know your marginal bracket. And for investments, remember, at age 70 and a half, many of you are fortunate enough, you're not pulling out money out of your IRA. You don't need it. You have pensions, personal investments, or rental income, or other things. And all of a sudden, at age 70 and a half, you're forced to take these distributions, and they grow each year. You're finding yourself in what I call the gotcha tax, in a higher bracket. So even though we have brackets, let's say the 10, 12, 24, and 32% bracket, you're better off. This is what most people will find themselves in. They'll find themselves in a 10, 12, 24, or 32% bracket under the new tax law. But I want to show you what this means for you as an individual. If you go into dividends and you're in the lower brackets where you pay zero tax, let's say that you have $100,000 and you've invested in, let's call it a treasury bond or a corporate bond. And on that corporate bond, you get 3%. So 3% of $100,000 is $3,000. Now, if you are investing in, let's say, a bond, on that $3,000, if you're in a 12% bracket, you know, you only have $2,640 after taxes, because they're going to take 12%. In a 24% bracket, you only have $2,280. And in a 32% bracket, you will have $2,040. And likewise, as a married couple, you can have a certain level of income at 10%. You would have 10% taken out, 12%, etc. The point I'm trying to get across is if you were to go into dividends, that $3,000 would be tax-free, because the first, as I mentioned, the first, what, almost $38,000 is tax-free if you're single, and $77,000 if you're married. So that's why that difference, knowing between what dividends are taxed at and what interest income is taxed at, is a major, major issue. So knowing your tax bracket can significantly enhance your take-home income. And that's why you really need to know what those brackets are, because there's brackets for certain income, there's brackets for dividends and capital gains, there's a bracket for your regular income, and then there's an Obamacare bracket. So it has gotten quite complex.
Let's look at the estate taxes, because although we still have it, I call it the death tax, there's an $11 million exemption on that, which really probably drops out most Americans there. But the problem doesn't go away because, again, there's dependency on what states you're living in.
Yeah. And here's the gotcha tax. 11 states in this country, everything from Washington, D.C., to Maryland, to Delaware, to New Jersey, to Connecticut, to Rhode Island, to Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, state of Oregon, the state of Washington, Illinois, Tennessee, Minnesota. Many of these states have either a state estate tax or they have an inheritance tax. And states like New Jersey actually have both. And in the state of Washington, they have the highest estate tax, and that's 20%. I wonder what Bill Gates, well, Bill Gates is donating his money to his foundation, so he'll avoid estate taxes. But 11 states have tax rates that go up to 16%. Nebraska has an inheritance tax of 18%, followed by Kentucky and New Jersey with tax rates of 16%. So, you know, we did a show, God, I'm trying to think, we did one about a month ago, is in terms of the best and the worst states to retire in. And we covered a lot of this when it came to estate taxes. So in summing this up, under the new tax regime that went into place in 2018 and will remain in place for the next 10 years, unless the next administration changes it, where you choose to live is going to impact the taxes you will pay. It'll impact the taxes you pay on your investments. It'll impact your estate and inheritance tax that your heirs pay. So more important than any other time, you really need to talk to your advisor in terms of planning for retirement, not only on where you're going to plan to live, but the different tax rates that are going to apply to your situation when you're retired.
And this is a good point to point out to listeners that if they want to get in contact with you about doing estate planning, how may they do that?
We have a toll-free number that's 888-486-3939. And if you're getting ready to retire, we can help you with that retirement planning. We have a tax program that has all the estate taxes and income tax rates of all 50 states. So we can actually take a look at a profile that if you remain where you are, what your taxes will be in retirement versus, let's say, you're thinking of moving to another state that is more favorable from a tax point of view, or let's say a state tax point of view, because this is the thing that really catches a lot of people by surprise, because we just took on two heirs, two surviving children when their mom passed away, and they were shocked to find out the estate tax rate of 16% in the state that they were living in, because they thought, you know, the parents had set up a living trust, avoid probate and estate taxes. They forgot about what happens with the estate taxes in the state that they live in.
Tomorrow on the program, Jim's guest is going to be Yolanda York, Social Security Administration, everything you need to know about Social Security and Medicare and where to find it. Time now for our real-life case study, which illustrate the points we've been making on the program. Please remember, this is an hypothetical illustration. Any names and circumstances of people involved have been changed to protect privacy. And so, Jim, where do we go this week? I want to see you do this one.
Okay. This one is the case of Robert and Barbara Smith. Robert worked for a major oil company, and as many large companies have for their top executives, they have a deferred comp program. So, you know, he was getting ready to retire, and his deferred compensation program was close to $700,000. He had roughly almost about $1.7 million in his 401k program. His home was paid for. Now, when we began to do the plan, one of his things that he was very much concerned about was lowering his tax bracket, because as an executive, as a petroleum engineer, he was in a very high tax bracket, which is why he set up the deferred compensation program. Rather than getting, let's say, a bonus at the end of the year, the company would allow that income to be deferred in something called a deferred compensation program. So he had close to $700,000 in a deferred comp program. Now, when we looked at his Social Security, since he had paid in usually at the maximum bracket, his Social Security would be roughly about $2,600 a month, of which his wife would get half of that. So that would be roughly about $3,900 a month. What we had to do here, because we had $700,000 that he has to take out of his deferred comp program. So basically what we said, look, he's 64 years old. We said, why don't you take out this deferred comp program and live off that and defer taking your Social Security? Now, the benefit of doing that, by deferring taking his Social Security till age 70, his Social Security benefits would grow by 32%. So instead of $2,600 at age 70, his Social Security would grow to over $3,400 a month. Now, why that's important, and this is very important if you're listening, husband and wife, is usually the husband's Social Security is the larger Social Security. And when one spouse passes away, and it's usually the husband that passes away first, women have longevity and are 85% of the survivors to Social Security. When the husband passes away, the wife has the option of choosing her own Social Security or that of her husband's. Usually she's going to choose the Social Security of her husband's. But when she does that, she forfeits her own Social Security. So in this case, in Robert and Barbara's case, if Robert defers his Social Security at age 70, it would grow to $3,432 a month, of which Barbara would get half of that, which would be $1,716. So their combined Social Security income would be over $5,000. But here's the key. If Robert was to predecease Barbara, Barbara would get his Social Security of $3,400 a month. So this is a nice way to set up a surviving spouse with a higher level of income, because the surviving spouse, usually the wife, will end up losing her own Social Security as she trades up to her husband's. So in this case, what we recommended is Robert basically defer his Social Security to age 70, and in the meantime, take out his deferred comp over a six-year program that would be over a little over $100,000 a year, and that would be taxed as ordinary income. Now, he had other assets. He had, as I mentioned, a 401k program that was worth about $1.7 million, and we recommended he didn't need to take that out. He also had almost $900,000 in company stock, in basically mutual funds, and almost $400,000 in cash. Now, what we did is we took the cash and basically liquidated some of the mutual funds, and we set up a laddered municipal bond portfolio. So his sources of income would be his deferred comp for 6 years, and then income he would receive tax-free from municipal bond portfolio. At age 70 and a half, when his deferred comp would end, he would then begin taking his Social Security, which for Barbara and Robert would be over $5,000 a month. And at that time, we were going to start making Roth conversions, taking money out of the IRA, paying the tax up front in a lower bracket, and then putting that money in a Roth IRA. As long as it's there for 5 years, it would be tax-free when he takes it out, and there would be no mandatory distributions. And so this was a way that we were using not only dividend income, tax-free income, to minimize his taxable income, and at the same time, basically increasing his Social Security benefits for his wife, Barbara. And since there was almost like a 6 or 7 year age difference between Robert and Barbara, more likely Barbara would be the surviving beneficiary, and especially with longevity, actually on both sides of the family. The only other thing that we did is we changed their trust from an AB trust to a disclaimer trust. And a disclaimer trust allows you the option, as their surviving spouse, to split the trust in two parts if you need to save on, let's say, estate taxes. But if you don't, you just keep it in a single trust. And this is something that there's a lot of trust out there that are AB trusts that really should be amended. The disclaimer trust gives that option. So just in case 4 years from now, Congress comes in and a new president comes in and changes the estate tax laws or the income tax laws, this gives the flexibility on the estate plan to either split it in two or to keep it into one trust. Anyway, this was using dividends and mainly tax-free income, municipal bonds, and a Roth IRA to create tax-free income for retirement.
And again, tomorrow on the program, Yolanda York, everything you need to know about Social Security and Medicare and where to find that information. That'll be tomorrow, Jim's guest on the program. Also, for listeners who might want to talk to Jim about investment planning, our toll-free number is 888-486-3939, 888-486-3939. And coming up in the weeks to come?
We're in April now, and of course, as we get to May and June, we're going to be hitting the topic of planning for college, and we're going to do something a little bit different this year. We're actually going to look at, is a college degree really worth it? Be surprised. There's ways you can make more income without incurring heavy student loans and debt, and we're going to be covering that because, you know, for many individuals that are retired, one of the biggest mistakes we see parents do is saddle themselves up with debt and use all their savings to get junior through college. And then all of a sudden, here they are, they're 55, age 60, facing retirement in 5 or 6 years, and they don't have the accumulated assets because all their savings, and actually they may have taken on debt to get junior through college. We're going to talk about ways you can cut that college bill down dramatically and some alternatives to going to college. I never thought I'd say that, John, that for you and I, when we were growing up, our parents, I know my dad never even graduated from high school. He was a European immigrant. He went off to fight the war and never graduated from high school. But, you know, for our parents, everything was, you know, juniors got to get a college education. And for us as boomers, that proved to be true. Those of us that got a college education ended up being better off had we not. Going forward, that isn't necessarily the case, and we're going to be talking about that in the months ahead. In the meantime, on behalf of John Leffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertised with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.